Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, and welcome to Stacks. I'm Tom Al. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 56.25. NASDAQ futures down 217. Dow futures down 456. So not a good morning so far. So, Matt, what would you say if you owned all this stock and you swore by these people and you're so giddy no matter what, no matter how overvalued it may seem, you never would sell and just buy, and all of a sudden the guy says, if you're a shareholder, you may want to take a seat regarding quarter two profits. What do you say?
Where do I sit?
Yeah, where do you sit? That would be your hero, Jeff Bezos, regarding Amazon stock. What do you think of that?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Definitely not my hero.
Amazon traded before the close last night. This is how crazy this is. Before the close, traded, I'm going to say, you know, I wasn't staring at it, but it might have traded up 100. Traded up 98 and change that I saw. It's now down 144. So it's like a 244 move. Pretty amazing, in which is 10%. There were an awful lot of earnings last night, Amazon being one of them. Facebook was the other. Now Facebook is only down 4. You know, that's the one I had a bid in to do. I wouldn't pay up, which I should have paid up, because Facebook would have been a huge winner. They do these little spreads for some of the earnings if I think they're worthwhile, because the volatility, you get a huge volatility difference in the 2 months, because obviously you're going to have a move that day, or you could have a move that day, because it's a big news event. So, whatever. Sometimes I try and calculate whether I think the move is going to be less than the straddle, and if I can do a time spread in there, I try and do it. So, usually I'll do 1 out of 8 of them, and there's times when they all are clunkers, and there's times when they all win. So it's one of those things, Manny. They're streaky. Sometimes they all move more than the straddle. Sometimes they all move less. Now, this the Amazon, the straddle was 120. So it's moved 148. So it's not that far off, you know, in that regard. Now, Facebook was, now you also have the oil companies, and we have Chevron down too much. Kevin, how are you?
Good.
We're talking about your hero. Saying if you're a shareholder, you might want to take a seat. Jeff Bezos, Amazon.
Oh, definitely my hero. I love Jeff Bezos. He's just such a good person.
Oh yeah. So how come just after we thought we put to bed, or at least I did, because I've read, you know, maybe 10 scientific things that guys claim that they actually did trace this virus from a bat to something else to people, because it never know why this is, but somehow or another, these viruses don't come right from bats to people. They go somewhere else for a while, mutate again, and it's always like a different animal. This time it was I don't know what the hell the thing was. I don't think we have any of them here. I think it went there for a while and into people. All right, so now, and once in a while, you get this idea that it escaped from the lab, and then all the scientists poo-poo it because they've claimed that they found it in the sequence from the bats to this other animal to people. Again, I've read a couple things like that. That doesn't make it gospel, because there's all kinds of crap all over the place. Now, all of a sudden, again today, we're talking about the Brits and Trump saying that this thing escaped from a lab. Do you give any credence at all to that, Kevin? I mean, I don't even know.
Well, they may know. I'm sure, you know, we have, you know, pretty robust intelligence agencies. But I, you know, you want to talk about it, then show us the data. That, I mean, that's a, you know, don't tell me, show me.
Well, Trump said he can't tell you. It's classified.
Well, then shut up.
Well, but be, well, okay. I'm sort of with you.
What else am I supposed to say?
Yeah,
I'll take your word for it.
But he has an amazing track record of truth.
Absolutely.
The truth. You can't handle the truth. The truth.
Yeah, that, Maddie, cue that up for the next break, for the next bumper.
God. So now the churches are suing.
You can't handle the truth.
You're saying
you didn't. Thank you, sir.
You're accusing him of not already having it?
I at least have that one.
You got a lot. You
don't have the whole.
No, speech, I feel this way about any of these politicians. You know, because you get a fair amount of I know something you don't know. Well, shut up. Do you show me or not? There is who in the political world would do you look at and you say, well, I trust what that person says without any supporting evidence.
Well, you wonder.
Is there one?
I'm gonna draw this way. If ever is a movie, you know, it's an interesting old movie. It has the greatest catfight in it ever, but just saying. It's a Jimmy Stewart movie, Destry Rides Again. Did you ever see that?
Long time ago.
Well, every time you asked him a question, he'd never answer. He'd tell some kind of story, like leading into the answer. And George Stigler was the same way at the University of Chicago. And I swore.
Yeah, I do that too.
I swore when I was sitting in his class. It's a mark of getting old or something. When I sat in class, I'm saying, God, if I ever get like that, shoot me, please. And now I'm getting just like that. because there's always some background to the answer. Because there really are no simple answers. You got to sort of have to put them in context. But
See, my kids don't have orders to shoot me on that. But if I do start wearing sandals with knee socks and shorts, then they have very specific orders to put me down.
Well, especially if you're out.
Writing?
God, especially
yes, I did give it to him in writing. As a matter of fact,
especially if you're out there with the metal detector looking for quarters or something.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, so Destry Rides Again.
Well, but he would always tell this kind of story. My question is, where is the line in all this stuff? We were talking to Maddie on the way in, and one of the contributors to the show. People could probably guess which one, but he says, "Well, I'm going to this meatpacking place this weekend because I want to make sure these places thinking about closing." I said, well, I'll ride with you. Well, I can't ride with you. What do you mean you can't ride with me? Well, you can't. I won't ride into the same car. Why? Well, God, haven't you heard about this disease? I'm going, okay. So my question is, what's going to happen? This thing is not going to disappear. Where's going to be the flip somewhere? 2 months, 6 months, 2 days? I have no idea. To where it says, okay, I can ride in a car with you. What I'm leading in with that one, Kevin, is when you get to be a politician. I mean, I think that you and I, let's be frank. Oh God! Whenever somebody says, "Let's be frank."
Oh no, Monday mornings.
He's Monday morning. But what's we can't say quite frankly because that means you're lying. You and I.
To be honest with you means you're not being honest.
Yeah. but basically, we're on a podcast, and sometimes we're on the air, and hopefully we will be soon. But we don't really give a crap. We're going to tell the truth. I mean, that's the way we are, and we don't necessarily. I do care what people think. I care that they think I'm telling the truth, whether they like the truth or not. Well, hopefully over time they'll realize that it is the truth and just learn to deal with it like you and I are doing, and Maddie. I mean,
I put it this way. Look, I may be full of crap sometimes, but most of the time, you take your pick. But I'm telling you, I'm calling the balls and strikes as I see them.
Yeah.
If you don't like my strike zone, that's fine. But I'm calling it the way I see it. If you don't like it, that's fine. But I'm telling you the truth as I see it. It may not wind up being true. Sorry.
You sound like Bob Brenly. I was watching one of the Cubs games from the '90s, and our buddy Dutch Rennert is behind the plate. And Bob Brenly, who was, I was very truthful, but he also very soft-spoken. He'd say, well, that looked like a strike to me. And finally, next inning, he goes, I think my old friend Dutch is just having a bad day behind the dish today. Summer strikes and summer balls, he's just having a bad day. Just the way it is.
Yeah, what would Hawk Harrelson have said?
Oh, he would have been crazy. Yeah.
Real quick on Brenly. I was watching one of those 90s broadcasts. Real quick on Brenly. He was much more critical than I remember him being. This is just a regular game, you know, a regular season game. And not of just the umpires, but he's ripping the opposing players. He's ripping some Cubs players occasionally for different, you know, lack of hustle or misreading a play or whatever. And it's like, man, I forgot how critical he was. I wonder if that's part of the reason why they didn't renew his contract. I always liked him.
But he was so soft-spoken, it almost didn't feel like you would pick up on it, and so would I or Kevin, but I'm not so sure we did. It was very, you know what I'm saying, it was very soft-spoken. It wasn't like, God, this guy's not moving. It wasn't nothing like that. You know what I'm saying? I don't think. It was much drier.
It was definitely dry, but with Len's really sort of positive way of looking at things, and then Brenly was very, you know, they were both funny and got along well together, and I thought they were a pretty good team, but he was very critical of the play on the field on both sides, whereas Deshaies is, I don't know, not as critical. I don't know, and I guess I'd forgotten Brenly's style just because, you know, hadn't heard it in a while.
Well, some people are, you know, who else is very like that I couldn't. And the Bulls, Johnny Kerr. I can't imagine him doing a game today. Every time somebody went to the basket and dunked without somebody meeting him halfway, he's like, "How the hell can that happen? Jesus, where was that guy? You got to roll." That happens every game, every 2 seconds now. But he'd at the end of the game he'd be sweating through his outfit. every single time that somebody didn't cover on a pick or something, he'd mention it. I mean, right now.
A lot of these guys, especially the ones that played, you know, and obviously Deshaies played too, but they really, you know, if you were a perfectionist in the way you played the game, if you had, you know, a lot of standards to the way you approached the game, then you're going to take offense at that. You know, and there are, you know, there are things that will, that they're just going to rub you the wrong way. What I tell my classes in, when I'm teaching, you know, any kind of business class, is there's two things in the world that just offend me to no end. And one of them is bad management, and the other one's bad baseball.
Yeah, well Kevin,
you know, and I'll be watching a baseball game, you know, maybe a Cubs game or a Sox game where I want the Chicago team to win, and the other team does, you know, misses a cutoff, man, I'm screaming at them.
Yeah, well, I mean, but Bob was one of those guys. I remember him being a catcher, and he's one of those guys that wasn't that big, wasn't that fast. You know, he was a guy that was knew the game inside and out, and that's how he made his living, was to be fundamentally sound. And
he was a grinder. Yeah, he didn't have the talent to stay in the big leagues very long, like some guys, where they can just show up. He really had to work at it.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of guys like that. Larry Bowa is like that. I mean, there's guys all over. I mean, John Paxson was like that in basketball. Even though compared to us, you know, he's bigger, faster than anybody's ever played with us, but still compared to those guys.
Right.
Or Steve Kerr, same way. You know, but anyway, what I was saying, Kevin, is where do you trip the line? You mentioned the politicians. Now, we do the show, and we can say the truth all the time. And all of a sudden, somebody, some imbecile says, hey, you two guys are running for, like, mayor or governor. Okay. Well, our first speech to the police and fire and teachers can't be you guys' pension is way too big, because somebody's giving you a lot of money. You want to get in office because you want to do good, but you also know if you tell the truth in the campaign, you probably won't get your mother's vote, for God's sake, right? But somewhere in that whole mess, you become, I've said in the show before, to me there's three levels of BS. And one is you walk in when your mom's on her deathbed and she says, how was your trading today? You're going to say, fine, even though you had a horrible day. And it's not about your trading, it's about her, right? Well, that I can roll with. And there's another where you tell your kids, don't worry, we're going to Disneyland next year, that type of thing. But then you reach the point where every word out of your mouth, whatever convenient, you just say, without any regard to whether it's the truth or not. And politicians most of them seem to cross that line. Now, with the CBOE, when I used to meet them for breakfast, we'd have like one or two a month. They'd be in town, and it sounds like, I think at that time, Kevin, you could give somebody $500 just for an appearance fee. Which, of course, I don't think you're buying the Speaker of the House for $500. At least I hope not. So, you know, Tom Foley came by. We saw all kinds of people. But you talk to these people individually, They're amazingly straightforward speaking. They're all pretty darn smart, especially he was. They know their stuff. And yet you get them out there in front of people, they're liable to say anything. I mean, I wonder if they're that way just because that's them, or if you and I wouldn't turn into the same thing. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I wish I did. I mean, I gotta believe that we wouldn't always tell the 100% truth to every single group we're talking to. Maybe we leave stuff out. I don't know. But I'd have trouble doing that. I mean, I think you would too.
How many times have we had, had discussions about college sports and their business model? And we can talk about that a little more today if you want. But because of the topic that came up with Lou just a little bit yesterday. At any rate, there is nobody who would. I think there's nobody who would design it that way.
No.
Who would sit back and say, "Oh, this is a really good idea for how we're going to do this. We're going to make we're going to fill our stadium with 100,000 people, and we're not going to pay the athletes anything other than the marginal cost of tuition." Nobody would call that. But on the other hand, everybody who's grown up in that system, you know, all of the coaches, commentators, and all, they have decided that this is, you know, a really good thing, and that they are really serving the athletes very well with what they do. You become, as you get immersed in it, you become a product of the system. You become of the system.
Kevin, there isn't
that way.
If you spun back to 1850, you couldn't find somebody in the South that didn't think he was doing the slave a favor.
Yeah, that's a good extreme, but obviously a good example too. You think because I treat my slaves better than most people.
Yeah,
a good thing.
They just came over here from Africa. They don't know anything. No, but since they're here, they're dressed, they work all day, they're fed properly. What's the problem? They're doing way better than they were over there.
Yeah, and I think once you become part of, you get immersed in it, you do. It becomes your normal, and it's easy to convince yourself, but it's also everybody else convincing you that that's the way it is, and it's that way for good reasons, and it's a good functional system.
Take last weekend,
I think that's the biggest thing you run into is you lose objectivity.
Take last weekend for instance. Take it, please. If Eddie Weber someday has a son. Or daughter. This is not like it's. The child. They went to he's got a sort of a child now with Venkman, the pooch. Just saying.
Yes.
Hey, before I forget, I'm going to ask you guys. I should know this, and I don't. You two basketball mavens. If you take a shot and it misses, but you were fouled, does that count as a miss?
No.
Not as a field goal attempt, no.
Okay, all right. I was watching the games last night. I'm almost like, I should know this. I should call those two guys, but then I'll actually show my ignorance on the air. But if your child spits out of the accounting school at the University of Illinois, and the top six accounting firms, however many they have now, it used to be eight, now maybe there's only four, had a draft for your kid, and they couldn't go anywhere else, you'd be so outraged. Yet everybody thinks a draft for football, baseball's fine. Why?
Oh, yeah, it's entertainment.
Yeah, it's entertainment. Why? Why, if you're a fifth-round linebacker, why shouldn't you be able to search every team out, find the one that actually needs a second-string linebacker, and go there?
Yeah. No, it probably is really good for the league, not just financially, but also to try and maintain some measure of competitive balance, and that's really important for how it's done. But I don't know. Imagine what it would look like, with a normal model like the business world has for recruiting people.
I bet it'd be just the same. Especially if you had salary
cap. It might be exactly the same, and you can't. Once that system becomes the norm, we tend to not question it.
No, no question at all. It's really. I mean, everybody. If you walk down the street, I was going to say into a saloon, but there's no saloons now. Interview 100 people at a sports bar. And say, ask them this question. Is there free agency in baseball? The answer is yes. Okay? That is an ignorant answer. Because it's true for, out of all the people that have that are in professional baseball, which is all under the same monopoly, how many people out of the thousands of them are free agents every year? 10? 20? Minor leagues, you're never a free agent. Or is it 5 years? Can you go after 5 years, Manny? Or, I don't think so. You're locked in. So if you get signed by the Cubs, or drafted by the Cubs, and you're a shortstop, and they have 15 shortstops ahead of you, and the Giants got nobody, you can't say after a year, screw you, I'm going to the Giants. You sit there and
hold out.
How do you do that?
Well, you hold out.
And? Go back in the next year's draft? How does that even do that?
I mean, there's examples of it throughout the course of history in sports.
Well, I
wouldn't necessarily recommend it, but you can do it. It worked for John Elway. It worked for Eli Manning.
Well, he was the number one pick.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying you can hold out.
But if you're the 10th round guy out of high school, your fallback position is to go to college.
I'm not saying it's the greatest option. I'm just saying that if you don't, you asked a question, if you don't want to go there, that's your option.
But I mean, at least if you get drafted for the Bears, okay, if you don't make the Bears, they cut you and you can go somewhere else. They don't get to put you in bum bleep Idaho to play with the Mudville 11 for 5 years and say you can't go anywhere. Baseball, you get to do that.
That's right.
Yeah, and actually, when it comes to football and where you're going, you don't want to be a seventh round draft pick. At that point, you want to be an undrafted free agent because you can choose your situation then. You can try and sign on with a team that might actually need you as a special teams player or have a position need, might need some depth, and give yourself a decent chance to make the roster. Much better than a seventh round draft pick.
Well, Pete Najarian, it was 10 or 11 rounds when he came out, and Pete was a hell of a player, but he's not that big of a guy. I mean, he bulked up to 225 or something because he would not do the roids, being the son of a surgeon. But he got up to 220, 225, but Pete's deal was he was real fast. So he gets drafted by a team with a three linebacker system. He goes, I'm not Dick Butkus. I'm not going to take on a guard, shed him, and go get the running back like the Bears are designed for. He goes, that's not me. He goes, if I could have found a team or gone to some place, the four linebacker set, I'd have been perfect for the inside guy on the weak side because that guy is mostly in pass protection. He was a pretty good tackler, but I was really good in pass protection. If I had to find that spot, I'd have had a whole career. But I couldn't because I was here. Then I went to the USFL or wherever it was and kicked around, finally ended up in Tampa Bay as a special teams guy or something. He got his 5 years in. But still, he said, I could have had a better career if I could have gone right where they needed me or I thought they did. Anywho.
Yeah, and that's what free agents get to do.
Yeah, that's what free agents get to do. And he was like a, 10th round pick or something, or his 8th. Anyway, Kevin, we were talking this morning on the way in about, as we beat up on the coronavirus, we talk about all the people that are supposed to be giving people breaks. Like the government giving businesses breaks, and banks always getting breaks, no matter what it is. Three things are amazingly sacred. One is your cable bill, even though they're charging for all the sports channels with no sports. No rebate there, right? That we know of. Out of all the stuff that Jay Powell talks about, how he's helping the world, the thought of cutting credit card interest down to like 18% for the 6 months of this virus, I'm hoping it's 6 months, that's never going to happen. Nor is any sort of a property tax rebate, is it? So the guy who they're telling people, Jay and Lori will be happy to say that the rent, people should not have to pay their rent. They're not cutting back on the property tax that the landlord has to pay, are they?
I tend to doubt it.
Where do we find these people?
In fact, what they're going to tell you is we need that money more than ever before now.
Yeah, or we need more. Well, that's coming. That's coming. Why would anybody?
Well, almost by definition, but that's, because that's what's left to raise money is to just raise taxes.
So what do you figure?
I think, Illinois is in the death spiral because, every time they raise taxes, more people move to Indiana or Wisconsin.
Right.
Or Iowa or wherever.
The only people that don't get it are them. I'm going to say that in 2 years, especially if Jay, everybody calls him Fred Flintstone. I never really got that connection, but I guess he does look kind of like Fred Flintstone. I would say with
I always thought Wayne Fonce looked like Fred Flintstone.
Yeah. if the people in the state are stupid enough to vote for the tax increase, which they will be, because they're going to listen to him and say it only affects the rich people, I'm going to say that we'll have like a 10% income tax, and property taxes will be doubled. You know, and because of the oil issue, they'll probably triple gas taxes again. That's what we're looking at 2 years now. And I don't see how somebody anywhere, especially the people in some of these areas where there a lot of the industry is closed or the malls have closed, I don't see how a Park Forest guy with $56,000 house pays a $10,000 tax bill. I honestly don't, Kevin. I mean, can you think of any way that happens, that check gets written?
No, and you leave, and then there's less tax revenue, and so they have to raise taxes again, and then more people leave, and there's less tax revenue.
But you foreclose on the house.
More people leave again.
You foreclose on the house, and you get your favorite minority or somebody real estate firm you feed all the foreclosures to. You have the bank buy up the mortgage, so they eat that, and then you give it to somebody else for $30,000 that you like. That's our game plan, I think, like it has been for 25 years. SP Futures now down 64. Ouch. NASDAQ down 239. We have to talk a little bit about that when we come back. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, everybody. Stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Matt Weber. Also, Mr. Kevin O'Neill. The S&P futures down 63. Not good this morning. NASDAQ futures down 235. Dow down about 500. Okay, why is all this? Well, millions of reasons, I guess. But mainly every single big stock that had earnings came out last night and getting hammered. Leader of the pack is Amazon, down 151. These guys traded up 98 before the earnings came out. So that's a swing. Now, the straddle was 120, so it wasn't like people didn't expect a move. I mean, they did. But look at the rest of them. Microsoft came out earnings the day before. They're down $4, 2.25%. But the earnings from yesterday, Apple's trading down $9 almost exactly, so that's 2%. Make that 3%. ExxonMobil, obviously another big company, down 171. Chevron, Texaco, they came out last night as well. And they are down 215, which is 2.5%. So virtually none of the earnings that came out. As a matter of fact, the only thing I can see on my, I don't have a green piece on my screen. So there we have it. Around the rest of the world, we've got over in Europe, the DAX down 246 at 2.2%. FTSE down 111, 1.9%. CAC down 98, that's 2%. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 574, that's 2.8%. Hang Seng, These guys were, I don't know if they were open yesterday. Hang Seng either, because their last was on 429, so I think they were closed. The bonds, 10-year, 0.60, again, sneaking down another tick. The Bund, minus 0.58, 10-year Japanese, minus 0.03. We got oil, 1874, so it's bumped, this is the June contract. It's bumped back pretty good from the $11 it was earlier in the week. So we're evening out the Cantango in that futures series. We're still out there at $32 next year, but the near term has come up some. Brent 26.20, natural gas 197, that's up 3 cents. Natural gas almost making it back to $2 here. It's up from 170 something. That's sort of interesting considering the oil carnage. RBOB 75 cents. We have gold down 370 at 1690, so gold took a hit yesterday. Silver up 3 cents, 1501. A lot of stuff there, Maddie. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
More stuff. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. The expressways are crystal clear, unlike yesterday where we had all kinds of overturned semis and issues on the south side. Today, off to a great start. No issues coming in on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. Stevenson and Eisenhower are still crystal clear, as are the Edens and Kennedy. Lakeshore Drive looks good in both directions. Only crash in the area right now is in Hanover Park. Irving Park Road at Barrington Road, there is an accident. Other than that, we have some closures due to flooding. It rained pretty much nonstop for the last 2 days. And we've had Route 53 between Park Boulevard and Butterfield Road is closed due to flooding. That's out in Naperville. Down in Joliet, looks like there's a closure on US 30 due to flooding. And that's at between Hickory Street and Highland Park Drive in Joliet. And then also down in Orland, Southwest Highway between 135th and 131st, there's a closure due to flooding there too. So keep that in mind, but everything else looking good out there. Weather today, it finally stopped raining. That big orange thing in the sky is out. We haven't seen that in a while, but expect lots of sunshine and a beautiful weekend. Today will be the coldest of the 3 days, but we'll still get up to a high of 57. And then tomorrow we could reach the low to mid 70s, and then another 65-degree day on Sunday. So it should be a good weekend. Today, partly cloudy with a high of 57. Right now it's crystal clear and 42 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 102. Right now it's clear and 71. On this day in sports history, Chief, 1965, May 1st, the Chicago Blackhawks were in the Stanley Cup Finals, but they lost on this date in Game 7 to the Montreal Canadiens. 4-0 was the final in that game. and the Blackhawks lost that series 4-3, the 1965.
That's with Bobby Hull and Stan Mikita?
Yeah, Stanley Cup Finals. Also on this date, May 1st, 1988, after scoring 50 points in Game 1, NBA Eastern Conference Playoff Series, Michael Jordan has 55 on this date in Game 2 as the Bulls beat Cleveland 106-101. First player to score 50-plus points in consecutive playoff games. Jeep.
Check that for a second. My memory, I'm going to say the Montreal Canadiens had Jean Beliveau. They had Jacques Laperriere was their big defenseman. And I'm going to say Gump. Was the Gumper the goalie, Kevin? Gump Worsley?
Could have been.
I'd have to pull up.
Could have been, but I don't remember. What year was it again?
65.
I can pull up the box score, but it does say the headline is Stanley Cup at the Montreal Forum in Quebec. Dick Duff has a goal and two assists as the Canadiens beat the Blackhawks 4-0 in Game 7.
Yeah, he was Dickie Duff, if I remember right.
Yeah, Dickie Duff.
But I'll pull up the, it just says Dick Duff here, but it sounds like he went by Dickie. I don't remember him at all. I'm not a hockey historian.
I'm going to say the Pocket Rocket was playing, Henri Richard, brother of Maurice the Rocket Richard, so he was the Pocket Rocket. Right, Kevin?
Yeah, he was a little guy, too.
Well, yeah. The Canadiens, now, this is back when all the rinks were sort of different. Not sort of different. They were really different. The Montreal rink, even though it was one of the only, out of six rinks, I'm going to say only two or three of them were standard size. Right, Kevin? Because the stadium
was... the way the NHL did it was there were minimum specifications, but after that, it was pretty much up to the arena to have the rink however it wanted.
Well, if it didn't fit, you were grandfathered in.
Yep.
I think the Hawks were... The stadium was narrower?
I believe so, yeah.
And the Boston Garden was shorter. But the interesting part, Matt, is the Montreal rink was the proper size, length and width. But there was no stipulation as to the radius of the curves, right? So the Montreal rink had these little tiny curves in the corner. It was almost like a rectangle with just a little curve in the corner. So they actually had where the in Toronto, they had this big sweeping curve. So the Toronto Maple Leafs style was they would always, when they headed down the rink, they would wing the puck into the corner. It would essentially pop out in front of the net, and they would just all charge it. Then they would forecheck. That was their big deal. Where Montreal had an incredible amount of more square footage of ice because of the tight turns in the corner. So they always had, like, the fastest team. So if you went from there to where the Hawks were bigger guys in a smaller rink, the difference of those two teams playing at those two places was like night and day. It was like having the fast outfield playing on AstroTurf. Right, Kevin? Pretty much.
So the ability to build your team around what your rink was like was substantial. In baseball, you can do that to an extent. You can build your team for what your home field looks like, but you play so many games away from home that, you know, overdoing it is crazy. But in hockey, getting home court advantage or home ice advantage was a huge thing.
Hence Game 7, 4-0.
It was more than just the crowds. It was, you know, we want to play with our team on our rink.
Yeah, oh yeah. Absolutely. And plus, I still think the Canadian, on the bucket list, Matty, are going to a game in Toronto and Montreal. I mean, it's just, hockey is just so sacred up there. It's scary.
I pulled up the Montreal's roster, and one thing that's interesting is it looks like every guy on their roster, all, you know, 30 guys here that played at some point during that season, every one of them is Canadian.
Oh yeah.
Which hence the name the Canadians.
Well, I can remember when there was one guy from the US in the NHL.
And now there's players from all over the world, obviously. On every team, but that jumped out at me. Jean Beliveau was the captain.
Yeah.
And scored 20 goals and 23 assists that season. Ralph Backstrom was
I remember him.
I remember him. Yep.
25 goals. He led the team in scoring that season along with Charlie Hodge.
Charlie Hodge, wow.
Yeah.
Got to remember, I used to watch the Hawks constantly in those days. Some black and white, Lloyd Pettit.
Yeah, Claude Perreault, like you talked about, was really good. Yeah. Henri Richard was really good.
What about the defenseman, Laperriere? I always loved his name.
I'll have to find him.
Jacques Laperriere. I think he was on there, but maybe not. Anyway, Kevin.
Yeah, he was. Number two, Jacques Laperriere was 6'2", 190.
Which was a huge defenseman in those days.
Yeah. Most of these guys on here, no joke, 5'8", 5'9", 5'7", and then there's some 5'10s. There's a couple, looks like on the whole roster, there's like maybe five or six guys that are above 6 feet.
Well, Perrier standing next to the pocket racket. What's he, 5'6", Henry? That it was like
Martin, oh yeah, something like that.
Yeah, Henri Richard. Yeah, those guys weren't very big. The so you see the Broad Street Bullies. All of a sudden, they come out. And they get these big dudes beating up on everybody. It was pretty interesting. Anyway, Kevin, we have
Henri Richard, 5'7", 160.
Yeah,
is what he's listed at.
Yeah, I'll bet he wasn't that big. The Kevin, you're our expert on supply chain management. As we start to leak into starting things up here. By the way, this morning I was reading how great of a job South Korea did on this, and Germany and Sweden, and I'm like, they obviously don't have the buffoons we have running things at every level. But
yeah, I saw the article you sent over, and it's interesting that that some countries saw the data so much differently than most of the rest of the world, and including the country of Denninger, which you'll have on after me. Because he's been on this since the beginning, saying the numbers just, they aren't what they're saying they are.
Well, the whether we're ever going to find the truth or whether we want to know the truth, Kevin, I don't. I mean, the idea that one article I read was so damaging, where they were talking about hospitals and how some of these hospitals were forcing people that were working on COVID patients to then do rounds in the rest of the hospital for the rest of their 8 hours without changing outfits and everything. God bless, Kevin. You know, I just look at this, and Carl was made the comment a few weeks ago. You look at these hospitals and the way they're designed, Kevin. They're not designed for somebody to come in with something that's contagious. They're just not. They're designed for somebody to walk in with a heart attack or a bullet wound. I mean, it's not like you walk through and they look at you like, "Wow, you look like you got Ebola. Maybe you better hang in this room." I mean, they're just
they do have wards for that kind of stuff when they admit people, but that's what you're describing. I think is the emergency room.
Yeah,
designed for that.
You're not designed for somebody. You know, they're almost like an outside room with negative pressure saying, "What's the matter with Kevin? Well, he's got a heart attack. All right, send him through." I mean, they're not. There's no thought of it being of something that's that you don't want this person in your emergency room at all.
Well, and I don't know that you necessarily would design it for that. It might be nice to say, okay, what do we have to do to flex in a different direction? But you really do have to design your process for, you know, what, I don't know, 98%, 99% of your cases are.
You know, that's the part. I mean, when you find fault, Kevin, it's always, I find fault with our people that essentially are in the bureaucracy, because if you and I are out doing our normal stuff and all of a sudden we get hit by an asteroid on the head, it just happens. We have other things to do. But if we had somebody who was, his whole job was to watch for asteroids, I mean, we have these people. It reminds me, the best line is in Major League, where Tom Berenger says, "This is the out you've been waiting your whole life to get." I mean, this is what the entire WHO, our several people in this place and every other country in the world, this is the out they've been waiting since 1918 to get, to watch for something just like this and act accordingly. And I'm sure they've spent zillions of dollars. It was a lady on God, what was I watching her on? It wasn't 60 Minutes. Maybe it was. Or was it last Sunday morning? She had her hand. She's worked for the government and outside, and she's this kind of heavy set lady who's, you know, boy, she should be on the podcast because she doesn't mince any words. She had a stack of 5 plans, Kevin, that were done in the last 40 years by like every other administration. She goes, they're all sort of the same. They all follow the same stuff. Watch this. These are the protocols. There are one tweaks a little different. One's a little more modern. So they're all the same. She goes, none of them were followed. Nobody looked at any of them after we spent all these money on them for like 30 years.
It's like corporate disaster recovery plans.
Yeah, do we have
you
one
know,
of those?
They feel like they have to make them. They make them, then they get, you know, printed up, put in a binder, and put on a shelf, and nobody looks at them again.
Yeah.
This stuff only works well if you practice it.
Well, that's right, and I don't know, just so what? How does the supply chain manager in you, which is what you are, how do you start the organism up here? Do you try and say restaurants can only have 25% of their people in there when you know they can't make any money there? Or do you have some kind of a property tax abatement when your state's broke? I mean, what do you...
Well, I think you the first thing is you try... This is part of why we have to get to it, is the first thing you do is you start... You test, you know, this is sort of, there's something called the Deming cycle. It's just plan, do, check, act. It's a real simple concept that people have a hard time grasping. And so what you're really doing is you're saying, okay, what do I think will work? Don't just do it full scale. Let's try it out in a couple of places and see what the result is. And, so if you're really worried about distancing, if you really think that's going to make a big difference, then you have, you know, you have some places and they're open and it's up to people to decide where they want to go. You know, if you don't want to go into a place that's where you're packed a little tighter, then don't go. But you try some places that are operating as close to normal as possible. You try some other places where you're not. You watch the results. You measure the results. It doesn't take very long to start accumulating some decent data, and then you charge from there. I tend to think that we're, you know, I suspect. Let me put it this way, because I don't have evidence of it. I suspect that we can get closer to normal than we think we can, especially because we've been doing it in grocery stores, right? They're asking us to keep a little distance in the checkout line, but we're all walking around grocery stores now. The local chain Martin's just went to a got to wear a mask policy.
Is it because the governor said so?
I've been going in grocery stores for. For the last 2 months, where half the people would have masks. So those who wanted to have masks had masks. Those who didn't, and I didn't see any problems. I didn't see anybody yelling at anyone else. I didn't see any of that. It was just if anybody who had a problem with not having a mask would veer away.
No
big deal.
Well, the it gets to me. It's like. You know, I sort of, I don't want to be gross here, but if you thought a potential sexual partner was diseased, you wouldn't just say, as long as we wear rubber, we're okay. I mean, when you have a...
Well, it depends.
I don't know what depends at all.
Selma Hayek?
Yeah, well...
Take my chances.
Well, how long...
roll them dice.
So if your buddy and his girlfriend break up, how long before you can date her? A year. What if she's hot? 6 months. No. Anyway, but I'm saying the goal is not to have a manufacturing facility where everybody wears a mask and is 6 feet from each other. The goal is to have a facility where nobody in there is infected. Right? I mean,
it's interesting. Same thing. I mentioned Martin's. You know what? Right up front, there's a employee health workstation so the first thing you do is you report there, they take your temperature. I didn't spend any time bothering them, so I don't know, I don't know what they do other than that, but, you know, whether they administer a test, whether they just tell you to go home with certain symptoms or what, but they are checking out all their employees, so that's one thing you can do. I think I mentioned on Wednesday, there's a lot you can do to start creating space by, you know, extending your hours, doing more shifts than you might have done, and spreading out. But there's some production lines you're just not going to be able to, you're not functioning if people aren't close together. And it's been that way all along. I have students who are working full time, and they say, you know, we're side by side, and it hasn't been a problem for us.
Well, I was reading last night. I said, okay, is there possibly somewhere some definitive work on this 6 foot thing, or is this just some stupid article that was written someplace and every tweet in the world? Now everybody's bought into this like there's no tomorrow, like Mayor Lightfoot. And so I dig in there, and of course now there's people that say, well, now the guy who wrote these articles, and there's a couple people actually, they wrote the articles in regard, and they're fluid engineers. All right, so they're guys that do, they put cars in wind tunnels, and they're fluid engineer type of people. Well, they also deal with pumping and things like that. So the point being is, if you are just breathing normally, well, this one was, if you are jogging or you're sprinting, how your breathing is like two or three times normal. So your exhale goes further. And if somebody's running right behind you and the wind's coming this way, it could be as much as like 30 feet or 25 feet. So if you read these articles, you're like, holy bleep, man. Then one guy interviews him and he says, but the droplet you may get is the one or two germs you pick up, or 10 or whatever it is, into your mind. Is that enough to get you sick? Well, I have no idea. That's not my job. My job is to say how far, conceivably, with the wind and
how far you can sneeze.
How far you can sneeze with the right wind and if you're running and everything else, basically. He says it could be as much as like 30 feet. But is that enough to infect somebody? Well, I doubt it, but it could land on them, type of thing. So, I mean, it's okay. And now everybody's convinced that 5 feet, you're Typhoid Mary, but 6 feet, you're okay. First of all, Kevin, this is all, some stuff people pick up on and some stuff people don't. Some people, the politicians, pick up, but some they don't. I mean, this is like the Twitter feeds. Why has anybody picked up on the fact that you're paying for your sports when there's no sports? Why hasn't somebody picked up on that everybody's taking a break except banks and the interest? Why isn't that front and center in every newscast today? Why banks are still screwing people?
What one industry has made a change is auto insurance.
Yeah, they're saying, by the way, I haven't got a check from them. They claim they're going
to
return.
Oh, not supposed to get. I just got my rate reduced for a while.
Okay. Yeah, they're saying, well, hey, nobody's driving.
And I know a lot of companies are doing that. Hey, it's 15%. I'm not a 15% driving reduction. I'm more like a, 80% driving reduction.
Yeah.
But at least they're making the gesture in that case.
Right.
That is the one that's doing it.
Yeah, and you would never get the thing from Citigroup saying, instead of your 24%, by the way, it's 18 this month. We're hard to pop out of there.
Yeah, check. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, but it's not going to happen.
Wouldn't that be appropriate? You really want to help? Every bank I've ever done business with is sending me a "we're here to help" email on a regular basis. You know what? You're really here to help. Go reduce people's credit card rates for a little while.
What do you think picks up with the? I mean, we listened to Jordan a couple of weeks ago. We had to listen to him. We listened to him because he's knowledgeable. And hit the little trick in Tokyo where they ran the mini marathon for professionals, and they used that as a way to not get anybody their sponsorship back. Now, obviously, there's no hockey, there's no basketball. I was listening yesterday, heard this, Maddie, that they're thinking of getting four sites where you get four rinks close together. And they were essentially going to play out the rest of the season on those four rinks. Like, virtually, four games a night type of thing. So that would give you what? How many days off? One a week or something? I don't know. Well, maybe you play two a night, I guess. So, now does that mean all the sponsors are hung up on the dome and season ticket holders aren't going there? I mean, the Cubs, I think, decided to give April and May tickets back, didn't they? Or something?
They did, yeah.
I mean, now what does that do for hockey? Does that mean, If Stocks and Jacks was a 40 grand a year sponsor of Blackhawk Hockey that we're in? I don't know. They won't give us our dough back? I mean, what does that do to play four games out in the middle of nowhere just to play them? I mean, obviously, you get some people watching them, but.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing, is they want to get something for people to watch, and they would like to bring the season to a close. Everybody involved is competitive, so nobody wants to just drop it right there. Hey, real quickly, before we get off, I did want to mention the Flynn case, because I'm surprised we've gone a couple of days without dealing with that. My prediction is that the judge will allow General Flynn to withdraw his plea, and then the feds will drop the case, because they actually planned an entrapment before they did it. They had notes on that. And then the corporate lawyers the original set of lawyers that Flynn hired let the prosecutors coerce a plea deal with an off-the-books threat to his family. And I think all of that is a big problem. But the bigger story here, and the thing that we need to know, is who been sitting on all of this evidence that came out this week because they didn't even share it with the defense, which is totally illegal. So it was excluded from discovery. But who has been hiding this? Who has been squashing it? Because this same stuff has been subpoenaed multiple times by Congress, FOIA requests, and the response has been always been you have everything.
These guys are so convinced that on either side, the other side's cheating, so they get to cheat or something, or. It's a total mess, Kevin. It needs a total clean out of both sides. We both know that.
Yeah, it needs a cleanse.
And Trump, to his credit, recognized that. And it's, but I mean, we were also talking about a guy who's and I don't know what he did, whether what he did to get convicted, but here's a guy who paid absolutely zero attention to the rules regarding a general's pension that he's not supposed to work for another government. He cared less about that.
What happened is the people who went and talked to him, you know, they were ready to close the case and say he didn't do anything wrong. And as the notes from yesterday said, it goes to the seventh floor, which means the director and the deputy director, Comey, and what's the other guy's name? I'm blanking on it for the moment. They said no, keep going after him.
Yeah, that's
So everything after that was pretty much conjured evidence, and I think, you know, someone's got to answer for that. Don't know if anybody ever will, but I am thinking that the case is going to work out that way. That if the judge rules that he can withdraw his plea deal, then the feds are not going to want to prosecute the case because now all of this evidence is front and center.
I would agree with that. I still don't think he's a good guy. Should he lose his pension for doing the consulting for Russia while he was on it?
Don't know. If that's the rules, yeah. But what did he actually do for Russia?
Well, he was sitting at Putin's table giving a speech.
That's not the same thing as consulting.
Ah, insulting? What is that? Insulting then?
No, you can disapprove of it, but that, you know, giving a speech isn't consulting.
He was being paid.
In Russia.
I don't know the full thing, but this is how many times, if we sat here for another hour, we could name probably 30 cases, Martha Stewart, Rod Blagojevich for that matter. Martha Stewart for sure. You piss off the prosecutor, they're going to come after you. And Trump did,
you know, yeah. What though, Flynn's problem was he pissed off the whole Obama administration. They hated him, and they really would loved the idea of getting him because he's the one that pushed back on Iraq policy, and they fired him, and then he went public with his complaints.
Oh yeah, that, you know, and allegedly Barack told what's the only one piece of advice he gave to Trump was don't let this guy back in, and Trump immediately did, right? So whether he should have listened to his advice, I don't know, but who knows, Kevin? There's so much crap that's buried in there back and forth, how we could ever figure out what's going on, how anybody could, I don't know. And that's scary to me. That's why I want to clean the whole thing up somehow.
Okay. Well, right. Anyway, go to break, get Carl on. He's better than me anyway, so.
S&P futures down 61, as if you're down 216. The word hasn't got any better there. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com. That's Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello, everyone. Base Stocks and Jocks. I'm out. It's Matt Weber on the board. Truer words were never spoken. There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. Is that true, Matty?
It sort of always applies, doesn't it?
But, boy, it seems like it really, I don't think I've ever seen things less clear than this. S&P futures down 60. Well, that's clear. NASDAQ futures down 215. Every single stock that reported last night, earnings is down to varying degrees. Amazon's only down 122, which is interesting because the options straddle where you would expect the stock to move, or what the market was telling you, was exactly 120. So the boys do it right again. Rest of them, we've got Apple is down 890, call it $9. We've got Chevron down only 90 cents now. We got ExxonMobil down only 87 cents. They've come back just a little bit. Carl, your buddy says to you, if you're a shareholder, you might want to take a seat. What does that tell you?
Well, it tells me that my so-called buddy ought to be in prison again. But, you know, this stuff that goes on with companies like this, the cross-subsidization issues that I have brought up many times with regards to Amazon just become, you know, more and more evident every time you have something like this that happens. And then, of course, they exploit it, which, you know, I mean, hey, listen, if you got a position like that, why wouldn't you exploit it, right? I mean, you know, that's business. But you shouldn't be able to get there in the first place, and you certainly shouldn't be able to continue it. And that's, you know, but this is America, so this is what we do these days. There's always something like this that, you know, that gets in there.
Why do you?
I thought it was kind of interesting, you know, though, looking at their earnings. I haven't gone through the entire report yet, but I did take a look at it yesterday evening.
Well, they missed by a buck. It's supposed to be six something, it was five something. So five something times four gets you to like $22, and the stock's trading, $2,200. So,
that's a small PE, right?
Yeah, just slightly, yeah,
like slightly elevated. Yeah. I just look at all of this as there's a dislocation here that's going on in the economy right now. It's man-made. We created it. There is, this morning, I saw a piece by UPMC's emergency medical director, okay, actual doctor, who essentially threw more cold water. My hypothesis on this thing is it keeps getting validated every day by more and more people. And basically said, look, you know, the reality is that now what we know with silent infections, this thing, that when you do the math on it, it ends up being about twice as bad as a seasonal flu.
I was going to say three times, but in that area, not 10 times.
No, not 10 times, yeah. Not 100 times, which is what we were being sold, right? Is that this thing was 10 plus, okay? And we destroyed the American economy on purpose over this. And it's unsupportable, it's stupid, and I want to know when the American people start looking for scalps. Because we need scalps.
You're on a roll here, but I'm just saying, how do we decide, when you talk about the Amazon situation, and you look at the entire economy, if you were to say, I mean, again, if it was me, I'd say, okay, only the pharmacy aisle is open, only the food aisles are open. Is this, as much as dumb as this is, to pick winners like they do, or like they did, plus, it's so freaking ignorant when you tell Macy's to close, and you let people buy blue jeans and dresses through Amazon, when Macy's is the one that's paying the property taxes and Amazon's not. I mean, it's not just dumb, it's almost like ignorance. What are you doing? I mean,
I don't think it's ignorant. I think it's criminally insane. And frankly, it goes beyond that. I think it's intentional.
Why would it be intentional when who's more important to the city of Chicago? Macy's on State Street.
Let me give you an example of intentional, okay? We knew when the first outbreak in the nursing home in Kirkland happened that there was a major vector problem with those facilities. Right? I mean, half the people in that place got sick. And something like 30% of them died.
Yeah.
And we knew that back in February, all right? This was not something that just happened and just was revealed to us a week ago. We knew it in February, and yet Cuomo mandated with his power as governor that nursing homes take COVID patients who were discharged from the hospital and had the virus back into those facilities.
Well, they also allowed hospital people to moonlight, essentially walking
over. I understand that, but the point is, he killed thousands of people,
right.
Okay? That intentionally cranked the intensity of this thing in New York by probably a factor of about two.
Well, they also had some hospitals that were making people who were treating COVID people do rounds in other, in like the cancer ward later in the same outfit.
That's insane,
yeah.
Okay? The only thing that you do in a situation like this, you know, because hospitals are not set up for infectious disease.
No, they're not.
They just aren't. The only sane thing to do is a sanitarium model, where the only people that go into that facility are people with that infectious disease, and if you are a caregiver there, you cannot leave until and unless you seroconvert, and therefore you're immune. And if you have to pay people a whole ton of money and put RVs and trailers out in the parking lot for them to stay in until that happens, then that's what you do. All right? And I understand it's going to be expensive because people are going to say, well, I'm going to quit if you do that to me. Well, you won't quit if I pay you enough. Okay?
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you're healthy and everything, maybe you get the flu, maybe you don't, but you will seroconvert, and once you do, you're safe. And that's the way you do it. You know what? Before we hit antibiotics, do you know how we dealt with TB? The same way.
You know how they dealt with TB in schools? I saw this. I got one on you. Once in a while, I get one on you. I used to go to the Illinois Lung Association the night before the auto thing opens. That's the biggest charity event. The guy who was ahead of that was my client. So we would go over here. We'd buy tickets. About six of us would go. And it is big collage of pictures up on the wall. And in this rural schoolhouse in the dead of winter, snow, you name it, there was no walls, no roof. Kids were in class outside because of TB.
Yeah.
They still went to school. They still went to school. Still had to be there. But you better bring your coat. People did it, but they didn't shut. But I guess my question to you is, in Chicago, I asked this to Kevin, and he said, save it for Carl. Your buddy Kevin said, save this one for Carl. We've just put, I'm going to say, Manny, what's the number? Lurie Children's Center, New UIC, Mercy Hospital, Little Company of Mary. I'm going to say $5 billion just went into hospitals in the Chicago area in the last 15 years. And yet, none of them are set up for somebody to walk in with a infectious disease. Why?
Well, because you can't. This is basically the problem you have with hospitals and why you can't use them in this way. A hospital takes in people who are compromised personally in some serious way every day. It's what they do. Okay, so you have cancer, and as a result, you're immune suppressed because you're taking chemotherapy. Okay. You have a heart attack and the guy has to, he used to have to cut you open to do grafts or whatever have you. Now they use stents, but in some cases they still do, cardiac artery replacements. Yeah. Cut a piece out of your leg and use that. And so we do those kinds of things all the time, but everyone in that situation is compromised going the other direction. In other words, the doctor or the nurse who is sick and gives it to you is going to kill you. And the thing is, what we have refused to do anything about, and this has been a problem forever in the American medical system, we kill 100,000 people a year with hospital-acquired infections.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You go into the hospital for a heart attack, and you die, not of the heart attack, but of a staph infection or an MRSA or whatever that you get in the, or C. diff that you get in the hospital. Okay? And so that happens every year. And so, and people are like screaming, they're screaming about these 50,000 people that have died. And I'm sorry that 50,000 people have died of COVID, but we kill 100,000 a year from this. Now, you look at a place like the Surgery Center of Oklahoma, where you pay a fixed price, soup to nuts, for a procedure. You know what it is before you go in. And that's what it costs. And so if they give you an infection, it's their problem, not yours. Okay? Their rate of hospital-acquired infection at that center is 1/10 to 1/100 of what it is anywhere else in the United States.
Well, one of my buddies had prostate surgery at University of Chicago. It was years ago. And he was in really good shape, whatever. And he was supposed to be in there 4 or 5 days. After 2 days, the doctor goes, you look good enough. Go home before they kill you.
Yeah.
But, Carl, I had a guy, I can't remember his name, was a professor at University of Chicago, and he got a grant from government to try and because healthcare is a very, you don't really know whether you get into good healthcare or not. Whether the guy, that took out your appendix needed 10 sutures when it should have been 8. I mean, you never really know that as a regular person. You might because you're more into this, but anyway, he started to do regression analysis on hospitals. He's trying to get discrete points of stuff that would, healthcare, and one of them was infections after surgery he settled on. The other was food poisoning from the hospital kitchen. Gallbladders, because evidently you can tell real easy, gallbladders that were taken out, when he got them out, you realized they didn't have to be taken out.
There was nothing wrong with it.
There was nothing wrong. Yeah, he had like 5 or 6 fairly discrete things, which are really hard to do to get discrete things mathematically in a hospital. Because you never really know, and he was saying that at that time it was so screwed up. They had some incredible number of hospitals that had paid the money that were, talking about your Oklahoma example, for open heart surgery, and half of them either did none or one. And he goes, if they did one, you don't want to be that guy. He said the difference between in survival rates were the places like, Northwestern or somebody does, 20 of them a day versus somebody who does one a week, because it's not even on the same chart. So,
oh yeah, and then, but see, here's the thing. When you get down to it, you know, and then I've pointed this out in my column before. What do you call somebody who gets a D minus in med school?
Yeah, doctor, yeah.
Doctor, right. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and of course, you know, the problem is you don't want to be the guy that gets treated by the dude that got the D minus, right?
Well, one of my, well, my girlfriend at the time, and she's still a friend and was on the show once in a while. She, her brother went to med school at Rush. Not Rush. What's the place just closed? They're going to use the Olympic for the Olympic Village. Michael Reese. And he said there was a guy there. He's an orthopedic guy. He says there was a guy there that did and invented this shoulder surgery that was absolutely revolutionary. I won't say the guy's name because he might still be alive. And he goes, well, you'd never have that guy operate. He goes, hey, he had like eight thumbs. He goes, you didn't want that guy. But as a guy who designed stuff and showed other people how to do things properly, he was a genius. But God, you want the guy sewing up your finger. But how do you know if you're outside the loop? I mean, everybody knows that every nurse or every doctor will tell you, oh no, if you're not. And one of my, my buddy, the guy who did Manny's finger. Dr. Bill, I just won't use his last name. He's this brilliant but little eccentric hand surgeon. And somebody, one of my clients, something happened to the daughter of a friend of his. And they had broken the ankle. This is weird, Carl, but they broke the ankle and put all these pins in there. And she got a staph infection. And the staph infection went to where the pins and stuff were. Something really.
Oh, that ain't good.
Yeah, that wasn't good. So I said to Dr. Billy, I go, hey. My friend's got this thing, and he launches into me. He goes, you know, don't be as ignorant as the rest of society. He goes, there's all kinds of doctors around that if you have the flu or a stitch, they'll take care of you. They're not bad people. They're not incompetent. He goes, when something unusual happens, even in a city this size, there's probably only one or two or three people that if you don't get your loved one there, you're doing them a disservice. He goes, I figure I'm that kind of guy on hands. Because there's one guy at Northwestern, if that was my daughter, I'd wait until I got to see him. He's the only guy that's going to save her foot. And,
yeah.
And the funny part of it was, this friend of mine ended up talking to enough people, he ended up with that guy, and she's fine. He spent enough time finding the right, but I mean, he said, this is not something you walk into a local hospital and have a guy take a shot at it. He goes, it's just, there are things that you can't do that if you care about somebody. I mean, you would never guess that there was that kind of a pecking order. And that's, you know, but there is with some of these people.
Well, but that's true in most fields, though.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you know, that's just the, I mean, you know, I certainly saw it in the computer programming field and, you know, in the work that I've done over the years, and that there's, you know, there's a couple of people, you know, for the routine stuff. I need a network wire pulled to my workstation. There's, you know, anybody can do that, right?
Yeah.
But and most of them will not screw it up. But then again, when you start talking about stuff that actually gets, you know, more complicated, it's a different story.
Well, how are we gonna get, there's
a lot of people you can pay for that, but you know, but how many of them are any good?
Well, how are we going to find politicians or where we were asking people? And again, you can always criticize people, Carl, and you and I do a fair bit of it, but. How do we get people in the mayor, governor, I'll even use the term president spot that have the background to handle something like this? Because we clearly I'm not criticizing the individual people because they have a skill set. Obviously, they got elected, be it the Oval Office, be it a governor, they have a skill set that clearly you and I don't have. I mean, anybody could have. Taking advantage of the political carnage 3.5 years ago, but Trump did. And I'm not comparing him, but I'm saying don't ever assume that even Hitler was just a madman. There were probably 25 parties that could have done what he did back in 1932. They didn't. He did. You know, I'm not saying that he wasn't one of the world's worst people. He was. But don't ever assume that these people don't have a skill set. And I'm not equating anybody here to him. I'm just saying, nothing was more screwed up than the time the two or three years before he got power. to go through all. Right. And how many parties were there? 30? I mean, and his was just one of them in some saloon? I mean that takes a skill set. I won't say talent, but a skill set. And now, but it seems to me that as I've aged, the skill set you want in office is getting further and further away from the skill set that you need to get in office. Now it's a TV personnel. You have to have a TV show. You got to have something. You got to be Oprah. You got to be Michelle Obama. Nobody knows if the lady even went to. I mean, she's actually very bright, so I'm not going to. But don't. You've got to be that. You can't be Einstein, because who the hell knows Einstein? You know. I mean, you can't be James Baker. You can't be, you know, somebody who's been in all walks of business and government and actually knows what they're doing. Those people will never get any spots again. We're going to end up with lifers like Lori Lightfoot in there. People like that. We're not going to get anybody. None of these people have any idea how to restart this economy, because they don't understand the economy. They don't understand how you can't have a, you know, tell people not to pay their mortgages when you still want your tax payment. They don't seem to get it. And I see it getting worse, not better. That the next person.
Well, yeah, it is getting worse. And one of the things that, you know, that just shocks me tremendously is you look at the situation that we've had happen with the state and local governments in this, you know, in this specific instance. You got Pritzker, who, you know, fat slob SOB that he is, very rich on top of it, right?
Yeah.
Extremely wealthy. And he's lecturing people and locking down Illinois, but he and his family get on a private jet and fly to Florida to screw off for a weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Now tell me exactly how it is that, and oh, by the way, doing that, coming into the state of Florida by DeSantis's order means that if you do that, you have to self-quarantine in your own home for 14 days. Of course, he doesn't care because he has a mansion and servants to go out and get his food for him.
Right.
All right? But you and I do not have $1 billion. All right? So where are the people who lead by example in situations like this? The answer is there are none, because they take advantage of this. And that goes back to what I have been pointing out since this thing started, which is that the people that are making these decisions know full well this is a bunch of BS. Because if there was somebody who was relatively likely to get killed by this bug, if it was anywhere close to what they were claiming, it's Pritzker.
Oh, yeah. Well, but what do you make of it?
So, wait a minute. So, if he's not scared, why are you?
But how did we flip society so easily to where everybody couldn't wait to take pictures of the Jewish funeral in New York, and de Blasio ran and raving. For God's sake, Carl, even Achilles the asshole gave King Priam his son's body back for a funeral. I mean,
well,
even barbarians have funerals. What did John Wayne say in one movie? I forget the movie. Was everybody deserves to be read over, no matter how bad they were? What movie was that? Because everybody deserves to get read over.
I mean, I remember the quote, but I don't remember the movie.
but I mean, how do you? I mean, I gotta believe. I mean, I'm gonna guess with your personality that your mom was a pretty strong personality. And I don't know if she's still alive or not. But if she was, and something happened to you, I gotta believe she's coming to that funeral, and she doesn't care about Jay Pritzker. If she has to sit the first row by herself.
She passed of colon cancer a couple of years ago. But you know, it. I actually did part of a column on this about a month back, when they started with the lockdown nonsense, because she was diagnosed, and after they went in and they chopped the active tumor out of her colon, and fortunately it wasn't in a place where she couldn't use the bathroom the regular way anymore. But then she refused chemo and radiation therapy. Of course, you know what's going to happen when you do that, right? But, you know, it's a woman that's in her mid-80s, and she's fully aware that the odds are this thing's going to eventually get her anyway, and she'd like to have the rest of her life in reasonable normalcy.
Right.
Well, she did. She got 18 months. Okay, and two bad weeks at the end. And up until that point, she was more or less okay. I mean, you know, as okay as you can be when you're 85. But then, you know, think about this. If these lockdowns had happened, and she lived in Michigan, so, you know, dealing with crazy that you have on your border over there. If they had tried to tell me that, you know, when things went sideways and she wanted me to come see her, if they tried to tell me I couldn't come in there, they would have been carrying me out in a bag. yeah. after I got done with a few of them.
Well, I mean, I don't see where legally, where de Blasio gets up threatening these people that we're tired of recommending stuff, and these guys are all wearing masks. He goes, I'm against that, but how does he get out saying this is not just a suggestion, this is mandatory? That's not a state law. I mean, where are these guys getting this power? I mean, we're way past martial, this is not martial law. It's not been declared. There's not an enemy. I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't be able to recommend to people. I guess, Carl, where do we cross the line where when I was 30, if it was 5 below 0 and it wasn't windy, I would still go out and jog, right, in the park. Don't know how right. smart that was, but I, you know, I was okay. I'd do my 4 miles, I'd hop in the car, and I was good to go. Now, at this age, it's probably not a good idea. And if it's 25 below and windy, I can see the mayor saying, hey, look, it's time to stay inside. It's dangerous outside. Or they might even be able to tell me, hey, look, we're having so much problem with people who don't have heat. If you're out there doing something stupid and you fall over on the sidewalk, we might not have an ambulance to come get you. I get that part. Just don't tell me I can't go out my front door. How do we cross from one to the other?
Well, you can't. And here's the thing. These kinds of rulings are flat out unconstitutional. And the reason is this. You can quarantine sick people under longstanding authority to protect public health, because if I am ill and contagious, you can quarantine me. But you have the burden of proof that I am actually ill and contagious. You have to be able to prove that. And if you can't prove that, then you have no right to restrict my movement, period.
Right. I agree.
And so the idea that people just sit up, and I mean, when you get down to it, here's what nobody in the political realm wants to deal with, but it's always true. People, there are never enough cops if the people tell the police, bite me.
Yeah.
Okay? And it is time for the people of this country to recognize that fact and to say to these people, we're opening our businesses, we're doing our own thing. If you don't like it, that's too bad.
Well, there is somebody here in Illinois, we got to go to break here, but hold this for after break, but there is somebody in Illinois here, a church that's suing the governor saying, you can't tell us we can't have church services. I mean, how can they tell us Jewish people they can't have a funeral? SP Futures down 60, we've been right here the whole time. NASDAQ futures down 218. We're not in a good spot, but we're at least steady. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, just Matt Weber. We also have Mr. Carl Denninger with us. S&P futures down 59. We've come back a buck. NASDAQ futures down 208. Dow futures down 456. Actually, Boeing up $2 here. We're not sure why, but Apple had earnings yesterday. They're down $8. They were down more than that. The big one here is wild is Amazon was up like 98 before the earnings came out and was down 150 when we came in. Now it's down 123. And that's interesting because if you're an option geek like I am, the straddle was 120. So dead on, Carl. Dead on. You got to love it. Tesla, which was up earlier after the earnings came out, it was up to almost like 800 and some bucks. Is now down 29, trading 752. So that thing's all over the map. Oil companies are both down. Chevron and Exxon, they reported last night. And like I said, Apple, even though Tim Cook says that the last couple weeks of April were better. Jeff Bezos, here's the comment, the best comment ever. If you're a shareholder in Amazon, you may want to take a seat. So there you go. This is after he's the only firm that's allowed open, for God's sake. Everybody else is closed. You think he'd be doing better. Over in Europe, DAX down 246.
Yeah, how could they be struggling?
I don't know. He claims he spent so much money on protecting people from COVID.
In Lincoln Park, my neighborhood, there's Amazon packages on the front porch every single day through all this, on everyone's front porch.
It is. It's unreal. I don't know how you can do any better. We gave the world to them. FTSE down 107, 1.8%. CAC around down 98, 2%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 574, 2.8%. And the I'm going to say these other two guys are close. We won't give those, especially the Hang Seng. Last trade's on 429. And the Shanghai last trade was yesterday. So, anyway, the bonds, again, these guys, 0.61% in a 10-year. One minus 0.58. Japan minus 0.02. We've got oil up $1.20. Actually, over $20 now in the June contract. It traded down lower than 11. So that's the Contango has dropped dramatically. At one point, we were, 11 in the June, and we went out to 32 next year. That's a pretty good Contango. Means that your futures go up going out, which is the opposite of backwardation, which is normal. Brent up 28 cents, 28.76. Natural gas down 1 penny, 1.93. RBOB is unchanged at 77 cents. We had gold getting whacked a little bit, down 8.50, 16.75. Silver down 2 cents, 14.95. Anybody got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Very quiet on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. We do have dry conditions for the first time in a couple of days, and that's probably why after a busy traffic week. But no issues at all coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Lakeshore Drive in both directions is all clear, as is the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressway is looking good. We have one crash in the area. That's in the northern suburbs, Route 21 at Town Line Road. There is a crash. Other than that, we just have some flooding down south and out west. Southwest Highway between 135th and 131st is closed due to flooding out near Orland Park. In Joliet, US 30 is closed due to flooding in a couple of areas. And then out in Naperville, Route 53 between Park Boulevard and Butterfield Road is closed due to flooding. So a lot of resulting flooding from the last couple of days of rain, but good news is we're going to be dry for the next few days. Lots of sunshine. The temperatures are going to warm up. Today is just the beginning. We'll be partly cloudy with a high of 57, but tomorrow we'll reach the 70s, and then Sunday will be a nice day too in the low 60s with lots of sunshine. So looking forward to that. Right now it is crystal clear and 43 degrees downtown, going up to a sunny high of 57. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 102 today. Right now it's clear and 71. Chief.
We're talking about these laws that come in. The thing that concerns me is I don't see how. Let's put that. I've mentioned this a bunch of times now, but I don't see people in charge with the understanding of what this economy is like when it's running. When you do really stupid stuff like close clothing stores where people keep usually pretty good distance, and you certainly could say that they, you know, hey, stay 6 feet apart, maybe as dumb as that may be, but even if it isn't dumb, then people will do that. And yet you let, you know, Myers sell blue jeans. I don't see how you pick winners like that. I don't know how you make things uneven, and yet they do, and people run with it. I don't get it. It's like, I never could understand why if I had I was paying for a Best Buy store and paying taxes and everything else, why they would allow people to come and take a picture of my, TV, order it on, for Amazon in my place and not pay sales tax. I mean, this stuff goes on forever, and I don't see how our idiots, unless they're getting paid or something, why do they let it happen?
Well, you know, when the whole Amazon thing, you know, long before this COVID thing came in, I've been talking about them for years, and the fact that Bezos, his strategy originally, everybody tried to call him a genius, you know, that it was a genius move for him to decide to open up distribution centers in separate LLCs and then claim no nexus. And this was something that nobody had ever thought of before. Well, that is such a load of BS. When we went into Milwaukee, I looked at doing exactly the same thing, setting up a captive LLC to operate the Milwaukee branch of the company. And, you know, because if I didn't, I would have to register and, you know, pay taxes in Wisconsin, right, as well as Illinois. And I talked to the attorneys about that, and they said, you're out of your effing mind. You're going to go to jail. Okay? And I said, okay. But, you know, the difference is Bezos does it. He's hailed as a genius. And then when they come after him, he says, oh, well, you know, we'll collect taxes tomorrow. Right?
Yeah.
But there's no back payment, all right? And the thing is this, he doesn't go to jail, but if I tried something like this at a 10,000th of his size, I'd be still sitting in a prison cell.
Quick question, to go back in history on this stuff. One of Audrey's friends worked for, you'll remember the name, worked for Warshawski's and Company. Remember those guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess my question is, if somebody ordered a flannel shirt or whatever, you had anything you wanted from Sears, and you're in Kansas 100 years ago, did you pay sales tax in Kansas? I bet you didn't.
Well, no, and see, this all goes back to a decision called Quill by the Supreme Court years ago. Quill was in a mail-order retailer for office supplies, paper and things like this, okay? And states came after them and tried to force them to collect and remit sales tax, and they said, we have no nexus. We have one office. It doesn't happen to be in your state. Go bite me.
Yeah.
And that went all the way to the Supreme Court, and they won. So this was the strategy. So.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about people living on a farm and there is no town near them that has a department store, I guess I get it. You know, and plus your sales tax was probably 2 or 3%. Nobody cared. But when you start getting, you know, TVs that are $2,000 and the sales tax is like 11 or 10 and a half, it's a big deal. I mean, it sort of grew. I gotta believe that in Warshawski's, if you wanted a part for a Jeep and the Jeep part came from North Dakota, that you probably didn't pay anybody tax either. I mean,
The quilt thing was, I mean, when I was running MCS, every week or so, we were taking a run up to Sam's Club with an SUV to grab cases of paper and envelopes. I mean, just ordinary office supplies, okay? Because, you know, when you're running a company that's serving, you know, 10 or 15,000 customers, you're going through an awful lot of just ordinary office stuff.
Right.
And if we had ordered that online from somewhere out of state, I'm writing those checks out every time we're up there with the truck at the Sam's Club, and the only reason we were doing it there is because it was less money. But, you know, that the advantage of ordering is you didn't have to run the truck up there either.
Right. Well, you didn't, now the Sam's Club, and this is why Sam's is not doing as well as Costco. I mean, people will say, well, gee, Costco's more yuppified. You can't buy a coffin or air conditioning system at Sam's, but Sam's was sort of designed for small businesses, right? Wasn't that most of their business? Because you could go in there if you were a restaurant or a bar or a convenience store buying your stuff from Sam's. You essentially got wholesale prices, and you could get a tax waiver at Sam's, right? Because you were charging on the other end.
Well, no, there was you could take your tax certificate in there, but the problem with doing that is that, of course, you can't do that for things you're internally consuming.
Right, right.
Okay.
If you were reselling the paper, you would not have to pay taxes at Sam's.
Right, because you collected it on the other end.
Right.
But the problem with doing that, and we didn't have it on file because all the stuff we were buying there was internal consumption. So we did, you know, we just paid the tax at the point of purchase. But the thing is that the Illinois in particular, you know, I mean, people get scared of IRS audits. Well, I'll tell you what, you want to talk about who comes after you in a retail environment, sales tax guys. They used to come in and audit us every year. And that was because we did sell some hardware. And so we had, you know, we had sales tax liability. We reported and paid it, and it was, you know, it was what it was. But every single year, those guys were in our office, and I have some interesting stories about my deterrent effect that I ran on that, because my number one, who was in charge of doing that accounting, he liked really good cigars, and so did I. And so we were allowed to smoke in the building as long as we were in a private office in those years. And so, you know, that was their problem. They had to put up with the fact that we both like stinky cigars.
You're like Steve Stone. Well, you know, we ended up, get a load of this, Carl. We have a securities firm with, you know, at the probably 10 people our peak. I mean, you know, which is a lot of people for a securities firm when you're, I mean, we had, a whole bunch of clients because we were doing a lot of phone orders, which you don't really get too much anymore. Mostly now it's managed money. We have some phone orders, but back in those days, I mean, the OEX was, we were the best execution firm in the world for the OEX. And we traded that. People call here and we call right to the phone. Anyway, all of a sudden we get this notice from the city. And I would go to the chiropractor once in a while, and I'd stop at the Sam's Club in Hodgkins, and I would buy, you know, we were going through all kinds of, you know, we have seminars, so I'm buying pop and that kind of stuff, and coffee and everything, and, you know, the coffee maker. And all of a sudden, we get this guy from Chicago going, hey, you're not buying enough stuff in the city. And you're like, what are you talking about? I'm not going there on purpose to cheat you guys out of your penny. Oh, no, if you got it, it's a, so the guy went through every one of our receipts, and the only thing saved us was enough of the stuff because the Sam's receipt is, delineated enough to food versus other stuff. And all the pop and everything I was buying for seminars.
It was all food, right.
It didn't count. So we ended up within like $10 of having to pay some fine and didn't have to. And I'm like, it wasn't like I was going to Indiana. they thought I was dodging like the 1 cent city tax in downtown.
Yeah, the extra 1 cent, yeah. Yeah, well, we used to have people all the time that would complain, like, you know, because we sold some fairly expensive hardware, you know, premise routers and things like that to, you know, to business customers. And we'd get people out in the suburbs that were like, well, you know, but you're charging us, you know, the city rate. Oh, well, yeah, that's because that's where the business is.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so, Carl,
I'm sorry that that's the way it works, but the law says that I, you know, that's what I have to do.
Well, Carl, so how do, when we think we, our gang is, we sort of the gang that can't shoot straight. When shutting something down is interesting, how do you get stuff back up? I mean, we're starting to see, as Kevin points out all the time, because this is his bailiwick, he goes, the supply chain, he goes, I go into the, he called me up the other Saturday, he goes, I just got out of two food stores, and I'm seeing this aisle doesn't have this, this aisle doesn't have that, there's a meat shortage, I'm talking about people cutting down. He goes, these supply chains are totally screwed up. He goes, this is not going to be a 1 month project getting this all back together. And a simple thing like, you got to close restaurants, but we need the truckers to keep going. Okay, well, where do you eat on a highway if there's no restaurant? I mean,
right. Well, there's, well, yeah. And one of the things that that people don't seem to understand, and, you know, you guys do ag to some extent,
yep,
you know, with the trading and such, right? Is that, you know, we had this situation arise in Florida. Now it's happening with the meatpacking plants. They down in Florida, the entire winter vegetable crop was plowed under.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's 100% loss for those farmers that put that stuff in the ground and paid all the money for the fertilizer and the seeds and the water and, you know, and everything else. And oops, now it's a zero. Well, now you got the same thing going on with hogs and chickens and cows. And the problem with that is it takes 42 days to raise a chicken. It takes, you know, what, 8-9 months for a pig and 2 years for a cow.
Right.
And there's not a thing you can do about that timeline. So if you take those pigs, you can't slaughter them because the plants are shut down. They get euthanized and, you know, basically thrown in a pit and covered with lime. Then you want some bacon. Well, guess what? It's going to be another 7 months before you can have any.
Carl, what, I'm missing this part. I read, a pretty fascinating article. I was telling to Maddie because his bro is in the restaurant industry and he understands this better than me. I did not understand, and probably a lot of people don't. Like when you close the schools, the amount of milk kids drink at school is dramatically higher than if you just leave them all go home. Because everybody gets milk. So they're pouring out milk all over the place in Wisconsin, every damn place. So and they said the amount of vegetables when you go to a restaurant, you know, a guy who lives alone like me probably will always get a salad, but I'm over buying the head of lettuce and the tomato and everything for home because I'm tired of throwing it out, you know. So the difference in what people's vegetable consumption is dramatically higher at restaurants than it is at home. I guess if I thought about it, but why all of a sudden are we have way too many pigs and chickens? I mean, people eat the same amount of pork and chicken at home.
No, the problem is we don't have way too many of them. The problem is that there's different sets of packaging that is used and different lines for industrial versus not. All right. I mean, if you've never been involved in the restaurant business, then you don't know anybody who is. You don't understand how this works because the Cisco truck that shows up doesn't have one grade of steak on it. Okay. You can order, you know, 10 different grades and there's small differences in price. So, you could change your mix to try to balance against your clientele and things like this. And that's all fine and well, except that the packaging that you get from them, you know, if you get a package of broccoli from the food suppliers for a restaurant, it's a huge bag.
Yeah, yeah.
All right? It's not a little bird's eye package like you get in the grocery store. Well, those places do not have the ability to repackage for consumer product. They just don't. Now, could they convert for it? Well, yeah, but then what happens when the place reopens, right?
By the way, Carl, you're
not going to do that.
You're talking to the only single guy in the world who shops at the Restaurant Depot.
Well, all right, yeah, and I mean, you know, and I tend to buy that sort of stuff in bulk because I eat a lot of it, but most people don't.
Right.
And that's the problem, is that it's a totally different supply chain paradigm between those two environments.
So the pork guys that are slaughtering the pigs right now, it's not necessarily a quantity difference, it's a directional difference.
Well, yeah, it's a direction, it's a packaging, and it's a product difference. And then there's another thing, which is regulatory too. And this I didn't know until I started digging into it when this whole disruption stuff started. Many of these suppliers, for example, let's say that you wanted to buy, you got the same thing with craft beer, right? There's a huge problem right now with craft beer because you have all of these smaller breweries that keg beer for bars, but they do not have a package license, nor do they have a canning line, so they can't make cans. But the other problem is that beer is not pasteurized, so you cannot sell it into the retail market.
Okay.
It has to be maintained cold. And that is perfectly fine in the commercial market, but they're not licensed to sell retail. So those places can't sell their product in the retail market.
Okay.
And that's true for milk, too, by the way, that's sold into the bulk market for schools and such.
Well, plus the schools have the big fridges, they could take a bunch of big order, but at home you can't, and it's not like you can...
Well, it's not. It's a huge bag that goes in that, you know, in that cooler thing.
That's right. That's right.
But you have absolutely no way to deal with that in your house.
So how do we, how do you start this back up? I mean, Trump was talking about, we'll open up northern Wisconsin. Well, okay, if you got a wheel plant up there and you start making wheels and Ford shut down, what good does it do you?
Well, you have to look. Trump needs to get his head out of his butt, along with everybody else, and just tell everybody the truth. Okay, this thing at the beginning of March into the middle of March, you could make the argument that on the data this thing looked like it was going to get really ugly, and we needed to do what we did in the middle of March. But by the end of March, we knew that was BS. It was factually proven that it was nonsense. So what should have happened on April 1st is the 15 days should have expired, and that should have been the end of it. And there wouldn't have been a supply chain problem because that 2 weeks could have been absorbed. Now we're 6 weeks into it. You're not going to be able to easily absorb it. But the only way you're going to, for him to turn around and say, you governors do what you want, but here's the deal. On a federal level, we're cutting off the emergency declarations. So there isn't going to be any more help. You either open up your economies and you let people go back to work and you cut the BS, or you're going to suffer the consequences. Because if we don't, what's going to happen in another couple of months is you're going to start to have critical shortages in places you don't want to see them. It's not just going to be whether or not you can get bacon. They're going to start to show up in places like machine parts. And the next thing that you know, your lights are going to go off because a bearing in a generator is going to fail. They're not going to be able to get another one.
Two things, Carl. One, a quick question, and one we'll probably talk next time you're on, because it's a big subject. Why is it that I'm reading the timelines on this thing, and all the timelines have this January, February thing, and yet I continue to get letters from listeners saying I had this exact same thing first, second week of January before they even tell me it got here? How could that be?
Well, so did I. Personally.
So how did you get... By the way, we just got a thing from Kenny Pocari that he finally got his antibody test, and yes, he has positive antibodies, so he did have it. Now, did you end up getting your test?
Well, I found a way to buy some, and I am negative, but I don't know if the test is any good because there are none that are certified.
Okay.
So I'm allegedly still able to be infected, but I don't know whether or not that's true because I had a bug. So did my daughter, the first week of January, that had the exact set of symptomology that has been put out as being COVID-19.
Yeah, there seems to be quite a few people like that. Matter of fact, one of the guys who calls in, he and his wife had it in first week in February, I think, and they went to their doctor. He didn't know what it was, and he sent them a thing 2 weeks ago. So as soon as you can, get the antibody test because I'm convinced you had it.
Well, yeah, and then here's the other thing, though, that, you know, they've done a couple of large-scale surveys now, and every one of the surveys that they've run has come up with prevalence anywhere from 10 to 85 times the official reported case rate. So the number of people who have had this bug and didn't know they had it, or had something, but it was too early, and they weren't claimed as being, it's enormous. And that's the other problem, is that proves that these lockdowns did not stop transmission. If you have 25% of the population in New York City that is positive for antibodies, then the fact that, that Cuomo and de Blasio shut the city down didn't do anything.
Well, I think what it did is, this is just somewhat of an attempt at common sense, if they sent you home to a bunch of people in your house, they probably increased it for a while, because everybody there got it, because you had it. And
right.
And the extent that those people are all either died or recovered, I guess they're either died or recovered, right?
Yeah, but the point is that if we hadn't closed the economy, we'd be in the same place.
Well, I don't disagree with that.
Right, and that's the thing, is that the entire argument for this was that we're going to end up overloading the hospitals, and if that happens, then Joe has a heart attack and there's nowhere to take him.
Right. In the meantime, the hospitals have laid off more people than anybody else.
Right. And what actually happened is that the hospitals ended up with nobody in them.
Right. All right, Carol, thank you very much, buddy. Get you on back soon. SP Futures down 60, same place when we came in. NASDAQ down 207. Back Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.